Here at the Pennsylvania Game Commission, our passion is wild. Tune in to our podcast, Call of the Outdoors, as we discuss all things related to wildlife, hunting, habitat, and conservation across the Keystone State. Hear from men and women who have a passion for the outdoors and who value and work to preserve our state's wildlife resources for current and future generations.
Hello and welcome to Call of the Outdoors, the podcast of the Pennsylvania Game Commission. I just looked down here and saw that it was episode 24. It's kind of crazy, and today is really special to us and to me too. Is, you know, last year we visited with these two folks that are joining us today while they were cadets in the training school, and we visited again just after graduation when they became game wardens, and almost a year later they're back with us today after being in the field for a whole year as a Pennsylvania game warden. I just want to know how fast this year went.
It flew by, blink of an eye.
Extremely fast.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you're all still smiling. Yeah. I think you're even smiling bigger. And you know, it was amazing to us last year. And you know, all of us here in marketing are pretty new to the agency. And it was kind of cool. It was kind of our first class to really see go through and everything that happens. And y'all were the 33rd class, correct?
32nd.
Yep. So, holy cow. Yeah. What am I thinking? They're just back to back to back. There's a class getting ready to graduate now, 32nd class. And you know, we're actually looking at the 35th class recruiting, you know, kind of why we're doing this podcast, because we want to try to show folks how much fun and how much passion that you all have. And it's a career that I know we talked about before with both of you, that, you know, both have different backgrounds and where you came from, but it's something that, like, some of the stuff you said last time, Hannah, gave me goosebumps. But I'll start with you, Hannah. You know, do you have some highlights from this past year that you'd want to talk about?
I probably have more than I can even think of or remember right now. I know that when I think of the past year, one of the major ones, which I think it's kind of a little bit of everything most exciting, there was a nuisance bear, which doesn't happen often in Bucks County, especially in my area. There's some in the northern part that, you know, there's a small population, but this was at the very bottom part of my county, almost close to Philly. So, you know, everyone's like, oh, you're going to get the Philly or the city bears. And it was Memorial Day, it happened. So, wow. I think that it's just memorable because, so we get the call that the bear's running. And of course I probably got 100 calls from local PD and, you know, the county was calling me and everybody, nuisance control, animal control, were texting me, blowing up my phone that it was around. I'm like, I know, I'm aware. So normally the situation unfortunately gets kind of to the point where it has to be tranquilized, whether it's like up a tree or, you know, in somebody's backyard, because there's the public, it's right there and it's a safety concern. But it was hanging out in a small patch of woods. So I'm like, why don't I set a trap for it? And everyone's like, it's not going to work. Like, they don't, you know, they get so spooked and they run off, or you're not going to be able to trap it. So I figured, why not try at least? So I, you know, set the trap right behind, you know, business, and there's a whole strip of houses right there. I think it was around 2 a.m. One of the local police officers who was sitting there watching the trap, because people wouldn't leave the area. Like, they wouldn't.
They wanted, like, to know what,
yeah,
was going to happen.
Everyone was just
What do you bait a bear with near Philadelphia?
I mean, same thing everywhere in the state, but.
Now, Brandon Feaster told me they only come to gobs, which we call whoopie pies in his area.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if you had a specialty down there.
No, nothing special. Actually, just Dunkin' Donuts.
They're high-class, yeah, bears. So yeah. They can't be just regular donuts. It has to
be
Dunkin'.
No, it was Dunkin' Donuts. And one of the wardens in the region helped me, Matt Tehan. He came down to help me set everything, because it's obviously the first time I got to do it. So, but we set the trap, and I was not really sure what to expect. And then around, I don't know, 2 a.m., middle of the night, I got a phone call that the bear went in the trap. And I said to the local police officer, I'm like, did you look? Are you sure it's a bear? Like, is it a raccoon? Is it something else? And he's like, no, it's a bear. So I just remember being like, it was a whole mix of like excitement. And of course, like, it was the first one I'm doing on my own. And I would say, that's, of course, you know, not so much on the enforcement side of the job, but that's one of the highlights for me.
Yeah, well, it's part of the job.
Right.
I mean, we have to, at the agency, we're the wildlife agency for the state. So there's that's what so many folks out there, including myself, before I came inside these walls, wouldn't realize everything that y'all have to do. And that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any of our, you know, trappers out there in the state realize trapping's tough. And then you got to go trap a bear. We got to spend some time this year with the cadets when they up at in Benazet when they processed bears,
mm-hmm.
and it opened my eyes. I mean, I was a little scared, and I wasn't even involved with it. So, you know, it's not easy. And for your first one, that's awesome. That's yeah. awesome.
And it was great to kind of get, you know, not the issue, but it prevented it from becoming something larger. And I was able to speak with the news and educate them a little bit on why we do it and how we, you know, go about the process of, like you said, we get to, you tag them, we bring them somewhere else where they're going to be safe, not any concern for the public. So it was
right. And the other important side of that, when you got to talk to the news, it's important that when any of us are out there in the public, that we're all singing the same song, because that's what this agency does. And just to keep everybody aware that, yeah, if you have a problem bear, or, you know, if something gets inside of a house or something you got to take care of, that's all part of the job. And we'll come back to maybe another one. How about you, Travis? Anything that stands out? I know you have one. Yeah. I mean, I just know it.
So I happen to have, and much like Hannah's district, we have very populated and more urban areas than a lot of parts of the state. I didn't really know that going into my district. You know, I wasn't familiar with it, and I looked at a map. All I saw was, you know, Butler City was in my district, and there was pretty much woods.
So that's not home to you.
It's not home. Okay. For me. No, I grew up in Wayne County. Pennsylvania, Wayne County, up in the northeast. And then I was living down in Allegheny for a couple of years before I went to Butler. So I was used to, you know, the urban areas and large population, but I did not think that's what my district was going to be when I got there.
So are you a Steelers fan now?
I'm going to go ahead and plead a fifth on that one. I don't want to cause any riots or insight here. So, but yeah, so one of the fortunate opportunities I get working in a very urban and populated district is there's a lot of, well, you call it fortunate or unfortunate, depends on how you look at it. There's a lot of small animal complaints, and working with wildlife is a huge part of why I joined this job. You know, it's not everything, but it's a huge part of why I joined this job, and it's something I love to do, getting those hands-on, one-on-one interactions with wildlife. And I just have a bunch of experiences that I'm running through in my head that were just kind of very strange, weird experiences that I'm sure most people will never have in their life outside of this job. And one that comes to mind, and I wish it was something like so profound I could tell you about an eagle or a bear or something like that, but it has to do with squirrels. So,
and everybody knows what a squirrel
everybody
is.
Everybody knows what a squirrel is.
All 13 million people in this state should know what a squirrel is.
Exactly. But there's probably something in the story you don't know about squirrels, and we'll get to that. So I was probably, I don't know, 2 weeks out of the training school. I had just gotten to the district. I still had to use my GPS to get home at night because I didn't know the roads. I was that new. And I got a call from dispatch, and I read the narrative, and it said, you know, the caller said that there's a group of four juvenile squirrels that he watched fall out of their nest of the tree next to his house and land into bushes next to his house. And he said, the problem with it is all their tails are tied together, and they're all pulling in four separate directions, and they can't move. And I looked at that.
You can't make this up.
Right. You can't make this up. I thought it was made up. I looked at it. I said, somebody's pulling a joke on me. They're pulling a prank. Or like, I don't know what's
my buddies got me.
Yeah, my buddies or teenagers went out and decided to tie some squirrel tails together. I had no idea what was going on with this. So my second thought was, okay, well, if this is real, how am I gonna do this? Like, what am I supposed to do about this? So in true game warden fashion, you know, I just showed up and decided to adapt on the spot. And when I got there, sure enough, there was four squirrels. All their tails were bundled together in a tight knot, almost like shoelaces. You got all tied together, and they were pulling each other in four different directions, and they couldn't move at all. So there was a small group of people there, the homeowner and some neighbors watching. It was about 90 degrees out the day, so I'm sweating profusely in all of my equipment, and I decided that the only thing I can do right now is try to get their tails untied. That's all I know what to do. So let me just try.
Did you turn your body cam on?
I didn't. Yeah. See, I was so new that wasn't a reflex yet and just didn't get there. But basically, I just took a towel and I threw a towel over the group of them to calm them down a little bit so they couldn't see what was happening. And then I pulled the ball of tails out the edge of the towel and laid down on the ground in this 90 degree weather, took some tools that I had and just started pulling loose ends of tails one by one by one. And it probably took about 30 or 45 minutes, and I finally got them all entangled. And again, there's a small group of people watching. I was sweating, so I was kind of nervous at the same time. And to make it worse, the mother squirrel was in a tree about 5 feet above my head at the edge of a branch screaming at me because she thinks I'm torturing her babies. And I was expecting at any minute for her to jump down and claw my face off or something like that. But I got them all untied, and then I stood up and pulled the blanket off the group of them. They all froze, look at me, and then scattered in a bunch of different directions, and finally went up the tree to be reunited with mom. And like I said, it's not the most glorious story you can tell, but it's like, that's the stuff that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And that's the stuff that stays with me. And you know, I tell my wife that, or I tell friends and that and family, and it just, it's kind of in awe because like I said, nobody else is having outside of this job. Nobody else is having that experience. And it's just pretty cool.
You're getting paid to untie squirrel tails. Exactly. I mean, you got to tell me because I'm dying to know, but what's the moral of this story?
So the thing that I took out of this, and I didn't know this until that day, and I wouldn't have known it unless this happened, is when squirrels get in the nest like that, and there's multiple squirrels, young squirrels in the nest, you've probably seen a squirrel nest. I'm sure everybody's seen a squirrel nest. They're usually a small pocket of leaves and other debris packed up in a tree somewhere. These squirrels jump over top of each other, move around in the nest, and in the process of doing that, sometimes, it's not very common, but sometimes their tails get tangled up like that, and they actually have a name for it. It's called a squirrel king. And you see this in rats, too, like rodents. They'll do that as well, and it's called a rat king, but in the squirrel world, it's called a squirrel king.
So wow.
That's what I learned, and now I know how to disassemble one.
Yeah, heck yeah. So everybody, all of your fellow game wardens, when they come across a squirrel king, needs to call you, right?
Exactly.
You know how to get it done. Now, that's awesome. And it makes sense because they're like kids. I mean, they're playing and shucking and jiving. And that's awesome. You learn something new every day.
I know it. Every day.
And this one's kind of off the cuff. Like, through the hunting season this past fall, obviously, you know, your first year out there in your district, is there any advice that you can give to our hunters out there that could help them when, you know, like mistakes that you see, just really minuscule mistakes that you see folks make or forget about? Is there anything that comes to mind like that when you're out there in the field?
Well, I definitely think that, and I've recommended this to people when I do come across them. I mean, one of the common things is mistake kills. You know, you didn't see or, you know, clearly what you were shooting at, and it's a mistake and you call about it. But there's times when people don't call and it turns into something way more. So, you know, anytime I run into somebody, my recommendation is if you're unsure or if you have a question, just call, you know, ask. And it's always going to be better if you, you know, give us a call and tell us what's going on, because even the people, something as simple as, oh, I didn't know I couldn't cut the antlers off the deer that's on the road, I know it doesn't seem like a big deal, but somebody, especially where it's a populated area, driving by, oh my God, I just saw this guy with a dead deer and, you know, he just shot it. It turns into a huge thing when it could have been completely avoided, or it could have been much, you know, more of a simple phone call.
That's great advice. And that's, you know, for me too, that's something I've learned here. Like, if we're human, we all make mistakes, and it's better to call, get it out there, and it goes away really easy. But if you try to hide something.
Mm-hmm. And there's always somebody that sees, usually, you know, it's like.
Nowadays, you got cell phones, you got, you know, trail cameras. And I mean, nothing's a secret. I had the same situation, you know, me working in marketing happened to me this year. My daughter calls and says, hey, so-and-so did this, and what should he do? Because one of the neighbors saw him do it, and it was wrong. I mean, and I said, the best thing you can do is call the game warden. And you know what? When he did, the game warden came out, treated everything. He's like, thanks for calling. Your mistake, you know, happened, and we get this. This is what's going to happen. It's no big deal. It's, you know, being honest, you know, we're out there doing a job. You're not out there trying to make people do things wrong. You're trying to help them. That's great advice. Have anything on your side, Travis, that you saw out there that we can avoid easily as hunters?
Well, what Hannah said, I think that's the best advice if you're unsure, call. But the other thing is just preparation. You know, if you're going out to a hunt, just do a quick check, have a checklist, or even in your mind, at the very least, your license. That's the biggest thing I see is license issues. People either forgetting them at home or they don't have a specific license. They thought the licensing, the issuing agent printed it out for them at Walmart or something, and it didn't get printed out. Just do a quick check before you go. That's all I can suggest, because there's a lot of things that can turn into major issues if you go hunting without a license or something along that line. And if you literally just stopped for a second, looked at your license, said, do I have everything I need? Completely prevent it. You go to the store and buy the additional license, or you go back home and grab it before you go out. So it's just the preparation end. Make sure you have everything you need before you go out to the field.
Nice. Great stuff. So I'll go to you on this one, Travis. Being a game warden obviously means you're a state law enforcement officer, but what sets game wardens apart from other law enforcement in the state, you know, local and federal levels as well?
So that's, I think, a big misconception that people have with game wardens is they don't realize that we are law enforcement officers. We're primarily law enforcement officers. That's the job. at its base, and then we do a lot of additional things on top of that. And that's probably the biggest difference, is the fact that we do so many other things on top of our law enforcement duties. That's literally everything under the scope of law enforcement. So in a law enforcement perspective, let's think about an investigation. A lot of agencies, if you are in a bigger primary or a law enforcement only agency, maybe you're the responding officer, but you may not be the investigating officer. You might have a group of detectives that come and investigate. You might have forensics guys that come and find evidence. You might have scene reconstruction or accident reconstruction teams that come and do that stuff. As a state game warden, you are all of those positions. You are your own investigator. You are the forensics person. You are the interviewer. You are, on another day, you're an education specialist for the region. You do absolutely everything in the scope of our job. I like to say we're jack of all trades.
And you can even untangle four tangled up squirrels.
You are the squirrel tail untangler. Yep. Yeah, so I'd say that's probably the biggest thing that sets us apart from other law enforcement agencies, is that we just have so many different disciplines that we're trained in, and that's why our school is so long. The Ross Loeffler School of Conservation's almost a year long. They're cutting it down a little bit, but it's very close to a year long, and that's for a reason, because we have to know how to do so many different things because we're covering such a large area. I think the average game warden area is somewhere to 250 to 300,000 acres that they're covering at one time by themselves with a small deputy force.
How many acres?
250,000 to 300,000.
Wow. A square mile, 640 acres. To put that in perspective, yeah. It's hard to even think how, but that's incredible.
Yeah, it's a lot of area. And obviously, we can't be everywhere at one time. So, you know, we have the deputy force that helps us. We have neighboring officers. And there are some specialized teams in the agency that come down and help you. But at the end of the day, you as the local officer are responsible for everything in your district. And that's the way it is.
We've been doing a big push this year with OGT, Operation Game Thief, and it's important for sportsmen to get involved. You know, if you see something's going wrong, call.
Absolutely.
And because the only thing that we can do, I mean, how many tips, Hannah, do you get from fellow sportsmen that see people as thieves? I mean, I'm sure it's tons.
Yeah. And even one, maybe that's not a formal complaint or a tip or anything, just when you run into people in the field and it's like, that guy over there, you know, I just saw him do this, or somebody I know, whatever the case may be, it's probably daily, if not a couple times a week, that, you know, it's another hunter that's, you know, they want to do exactly what we're doing, protect the resource and make sure everyone's safe and doing what they should be doing.
Our main job is to make sure everything's here for the next generation. And you know, and so many folks, again, game wardens, like you said, it's kind of a misconception. Do you have anything to add to that about, you know, game wardens, Hannah, how it differs from a lot of other law enforcement?
I think he covered everything pretty well. I mean, in addition to the enforcement side and us having a lot of different jobs within that, you know, we do have our deputy force, which he mentioned. So, you know, we're a supervisor. We do trainings for the deputies. We also do a lot of the permits, the things that come through. So that's like a little bit of the, maybe not so much enforcement, but people might not think like propagation or, you know, especially in my area, menagerie or wildlife rehab. Those are the facilities we go to visit to make sure that they're following this rules and things that we have set in place. So that's just another side, just a whole bunch of different jobs that we, you know, do.
Eight hours a day is easy to tackle, I'm sure. There's plenty to do. But the other cool thing is there is so much diversity in what y'all do. And the other side of it, which for us is, you know, right in our wheelhouse, is the reach, the outreach, the information, education, and you're all in the public all the time. Hannah came and she had a tube of chapstick that looked like a shotgun shell, and I'm like, that is so cool, and that was awesome. But we're like, you know, we need these outreach tools so people do know that we're, you know, it's way more than just hunting here at the Game Commission, which is a big part. It funds just about everything we do, and we're all about hunters but there's a bigger world of wildlife, and it's just cool to hear these stories. But, Hannah, I'm going to go to you on this one. But looking back over this last year and your position now as a state game warden, has it played out the way you imagined when you came out of training school?
I think it is pretty accurate to what I was expecting. I think they do a great job at training us at everything we just mentioned, all the different things that we're going to be doing every day. There's really not much that has happened yet that has been completely unexpected.
Wow.
So
that tells you how well our training school is then, right. if that's the case. Anything out of the ordinary that you happened, you know, that you didn't imagine coming out of that school, Travis?
Nothing that we weren't trained to know could happen, but I was surprised by the fact that, you know, everything that has happened in the last year that I've been in the field, it's all happened in the last year. The fact that I had so much different types of investigations and events that I was doing, you know, in the training school, we have a lot of officers that come in and say, oh, my first year, you know, I had to deal with somebody like a hunter that shot another hunter. We call them HRSIs or hunting related shooting incidents. Or somebody, another instructor would say, oh, I had to deal with a DUI, which is not our main scope, but it happens and we run into it. And as law enforcement officers, we have to take care of it. And just hear all these different like major events that these instructors say. And you say, well, most people think that'll never happen to me in a year, maybe over a 10-year career, I'll have all those things happen. But for me personally, in the last year, I've had a number of those things happen. And I had to deal with them in the moment, whether I was ready for them or not. And it's actually something that I enjoy because it forces me to be prepared for that stuff. So I did have a hunting related shooting incident, unfortunately, in my district. Luckily the individual was okay and they made it out. It was self-inflicted. But you know, going through the process of investigating that and doing the reports for that, I'm now a lot more familiar with that than I would have been if, say, this happened 10 years down the line and that was my first one. So like I said, just the whole year, I didn't expect all of this stuff to happen at one time in the first year, but it did. And it's just making me, I'm just learning every day.
That's awesome. Something happened this year to one of Dave Mitchell, our deputy executive director. And it was an incident that happened to him while I was in the woods. And he said to me, he goes, I went back to my training school, and he's been out of the school for 30 years. And the instinct that it took him a split second to remember that training and take care of the situation, defuse mm-hmm. the situation that he hasn't used in 30 years, those skills. So that's really important, you know, to folks that are looking at to be a game warden as a career, that when they come through the Ross Loeffler School of Conservation, here in Pennsylvania, they're trained to be a game warden. Yeah. And that's great news to hear that. And I get excited every time I talk to y'all, because it's just when you got smiles on your face, that's the people that we know love their job. Let's talk about public interaction that you've had over this year, good, bad, indifferent, whatever. But have you learned anything from that interaction and that how it's helped you in the field? Travis, go ahead and...
Yeah, so I was actually thinking about this on the way down, and you know, we talked about the training school a lot. We do almost a year of training, and it's thousands of hours of training, and through all of those thousands of hours, almost all the public interaction training we're doing, we're focusing on what if things go wrong. So what if something, you know, the person's not agreeable, or what if you have a major issue that this person is presenting you? How do you deal with that? Because that's the stuff that you need to prepare for. That's the stuff that you need to be able to have knowledge beforehand to deal with it in the moment.
How to tie them up in a pretzel.
And then untie them like squirrel tails. Yeah. It's full circle. But you know, very few of the interaction scenarios that we train in the training school are, you know, just the average good scenario, nothing happened, and then you let them, you know, you go on your separate ways with the person, and that's it. Because you don't really need to train for that. That's a normal day conversation. You have a pleasant conversation with somebody, you part ways, and that's it. You don't think about it again. I was surprised to see that in the field, that's the bulk of our interactions with the public. I'm dealing with people that are good people, they're kind people, they're respectful people, and I'm having a pleasant conversation with them. They're doing everything right or doing everything to the best of their ability that they can. Maybe I have to help them with something, but
they're happy to see you.
They're happy to see me, and they're parting ways on good note. And you know, going into it out of the school, because we did so much training on the opposite side of that, you start to think, oh man, every interaction is going to be just this difficult and confrontational thing, but it's really not.
You're waiting to pull that taser out.
Yeah, right, right. And I haven't had to at all. I haven't even come close. So awesome. That's what I've learned with the public is that the vast majority of the people out there, they're happy to see us. They want us out there, and they support the job that we're doing and the job that the agency's doing, because they know it's for the good of the public. It's for their safety. It's for their family safety. It's for everybody's safety. And then they know it's good for the wildlife too. We're out there trying to catch these poachers that are using the resource unfairly, people that are doing things unsafely and putting other people in danger. Those are the people that we're trying to catch. And they know that. Most of the people know that, and they're happy to support us in any way. And the interactions that I've had, you know, I say the public can either be your worst enemy or your greatest asset. And that's all dependent on you, on how you want to interact with them. If you're going to, you know, behave poorly towards people, you can expect that back from them. But if you're respectful and understanding and you know, kind to people, they're going to mirror that back to you as well, and they'll even help you from there too. I've had unbelievable amount of people that I've talked to randomly in the field, forgot their name as soon as I left because I'm terrible with names, but then they call me up a week later and said, hey, you know, we had a conversation the other day, and then I just found out that my neighbor Joe over here is poaching deer at night. You should check into it. And that's how you know, we work together with the public. Like we said before, I can't be everywhere in the district. We have so many miles that we're covering. It's really the public's job to help us out do that, and that's what helps the wildlife and helps them overall.
Networking. I mean, when exactly. when you boil down life, especially in a career, no matter what you do, networking is so crucial. Anything with you, Hannah, that sticks out that might have been that you weren't ready for out there? You know, sky's the limit.
Yeah, I think, again, he hit it pretty well with I enjoy definitely in the area I'm in educating. You know, I always take any opportunity to – you know, inform people why things are the way they are, why we do things the way we do. But even off of, you know, treating people and the people we run into, even if there is maybe something that's not all good, I had a guy, a few guys, turkey season, first day of turkey season, there was some issues. They were hunting. One guy didn't have a license, and two didn't tag the turkey. But guess who last week called me when they found an injured owl? Same guy.
Then you wrote him a ticket last year, and he calls you, and now you're friend. That's,
yeah.
But yeah, you just guided him in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, and, you know, I think a lot of us probably leave certain situations, you know, like hope next time I see you, it's on a better note, but usually it is, you know, they take the opportunity and learn from it, or they made a mistake, and, you know, they're the same people that are calling us for other people who might be not doing something the right way, or right. injured animal or anything, you know, that we...
That's awesome. That means you left the situation, they're not mad, they understand. I mean, it's like you go out on a highway and you go 20 miles an hour over the speed limit and you get a ticket, you can't be mad. You're doing wrong. I mean, it's the same scenario. But I have this is probably the most important question to me. Have either of you got a chance to hunt this year?
I'll let you take that first, because you're
I went yesterday morning.
Atta girl.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get to use my new bow. I know we spoke about that last time.
I was
going to
ask you about
time.
That.
I kind of dropped the ball on that, and I don't think I practiced as much as I should have. So, I did practice, and I got used to it, but I just don't think that I'm ready to take it out. But I went pheasant hunting a couple months ago, and yesterday I got two ducks. So
nice.
We're, you know, expanding still,
yeah.
And I've been enjoying the waterfowl hunting.
You know, it's funny, and I've never been into that side. Tyler has, and my daughter, who's 20, she's always turkey hunted with me, and last year was the first year, because of COVID, she got more experience. She loves waterfowling, and like Crescenda that works in our bureau, like the gentleman that she's dating, he's a big waterfowler. She's really into waterfowling. I think duck and goose hunt might be, you know, one of those bridges for females, because they seem, it's social,
mm-hmm.
it's fun, and when the action happens, it's... You know, it's not easy by any chance, but no, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear it. How about you, Travis? You been?
I did a little bit. I did a lot of small game this year, and then I tried out dove hunting for the first time
oh,
in
wow.
my life, which with the ammo shortage, I only had one box of shells, and I didn't realize how fast those suckers move. I tell you, that box of shells went pretty quick, and I didn't have anything to show for it. So it was fun nonetheless, but next year I'm going to get a couple more boxes of shells and maybe practice a little bit of trap shooting in between. So.
The best part of dove hunting is smelling gunpowder.
Yes.
I mean, it's just part of that's
that's what we tell ourselves to feel better about, missing all the doves.
Especially yeah. guys. But then here's what I've learned. So you go out there and shoot a box of shells and never hit a dove, and you take a female, take a lady out there, mm-hmm. never been dove hunting, the first one that flies by, she just pops out of the
yep.
sky, because yep. they're better shots
every
than
time
are.
Yeah.
Yesterday my first shot got a duck, which I won a couple weeks ago, and I have to say, another, you know, awesome part of the job is the, you know, the people we get to work with, whether it's another agency or not. I have a friend now who I consider Adam is his name. He works with the USDA, and he's the one that's been taking me out. He really enjoys, you know, getting people interested and started, and he knew that that's, you know, what I'm trying to expand and get into different things. So he took me a couple weeks ago, and then similar, I had one duck for the whole box to probably show. But yesterday, the first shot I took, I got a duck, and I was like, well, this is already an improvement.
You should just put your gun away and say, hey, I'm 1,000%. I'm
yeah.
good. No, but I take my hat off to Adam, because – we need more Adams out there.
Yes,
we need
do.
People out there to you know, and we've gotten better as Pennsylvanians. And I'm just going to be straight, because I've been all over the country, and every time you run into somebody from Pennsylvania, you can tell, because we really it's almost a selfishness as we take to game out there and hunting and in our spot or whatever. And I'm just being real because it is. It's a real thing. But, you know, we need to be able to share those experiences. Maybe he might not even carry a gun, but he went and made sure.
Oh, yeah. He did all the calling, and he barely took any shots because that's what he wanted me to
that's
be
awesome.
The one.
That's awesome. That's awesome. My hat's off to him. And, and we need more of those folks out there. And that's part of our job. That's part of what game wardens do, too. The more that we can recruit and expose those opportunities, the better it is. I mean, bottom line is hunting funds conservation. I mean, we can't argue that. Whether it's hunting license or, you know, and shooting nowadays, you know, with you said about ammo shortages and, you know, the Pittman Robertson funds that come through ammunition and guns and, you know, firearms and archery equipment, that's all funding conservation to make sure that these animals, not just the ones that we hunt, but all 480 species that we have here and are under our umbrella here at the Game Commission, survive for the next generation. And then, you know, when we all retire, that's somebody else's responsibility. But
I'd tag on to that with something that was eye-opening for me when I got in my district, and I know a lot of counties do it around the state, is the youth field days that happen. And even with COVID, we had a youth field day in Butler County that was hosted by a local sportsman's club that does a lot with us. They're great about it. And we had 300-plus kids come and participate in this youth field day that had all kinds of different outdoor recreation booths. The Game Commission had one there, obviously focused on hunting, but there was everything from shooting shotguns to rifles to bow and arrow to learning about honeybees and how they interact with the environment, learning about hunting dogs, just everything. And I mentioned earlier how urban and populated a lot of my district is. I saw kids there that had never been hunting in their life, that had never really gone and even camped in their life, and they're having a ball. And we hear this notion lately that, oh, you know, kids, they don't want to go outdoors anymore. They're just on the technology. That's not true. I saw that day every single kid that came through the booth, all 300 of them, had a huge smile on their face. They are having the time of their lives. And that's how we, you know, propagate the tradition of hunting in Pennsylvania, is give the kids an opportunity. They want to do it. They just need the opportunity. And then, like you said, they need somebody to teach them how to do it and learn the right way to do it. And I think, you know, this could go on for indefinitely. You know, we can have a hunting tradition in Pennsylvania. Sure. We just got to pass it down to our kids.
I say that a lot, and there's lots of gateways, you know, and it can be camping. It can be fishing. It can be building a campfire. Any of that stuff can be gateways to conservation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nowadays, I think if COVID and it has taught us anything, is that time is so valuable in how you spend that time. Like, I love the fact, and you and I, and we all need to talk about youth field days more, because it's something that we've brushed around a lot the last year in marketing, and we've got to bring that strength back to those events. The one that you're at is, you know, they've been doing it for years, and they know how to do it, and they get it done. There's a lot of those around the state, but we have so many opportunities out there to promote not just what we do, but all conservation. Like you said, honeybees. I had no idea that was a pollinator. And, you know, you live in obviously we knew it was a pollinator, but how important it is. But if you live in a urban area, I mean, planting pollinators is a form of conservation that has big gains at the end of it. And just little things like that we all can do to be better stewards. We take advantage of a lot of those things. But, you know, I'm going to ask both of you this question because I'm going to ask Hannah first. What makes you wake up every day and love what you do?
I don't know if I have to answer that, even everything that we talked about, right? Like, that's exactly what every single day is different. It might, even when you think you can plan something, sometimes it doesn't go that way. Just every different aspect of the job is what, you know, it keeps it different. I enjoy it. I enjoy working with the public, which maybe not everybody feels that way, but I enjoy almost every part of, you know, what we do. So,
how about, I think it was your niece. Was it your niece that you were influencing? You had a young niece or?
Oh, my nephew.
Your nephew.
Yeah, yep.
That they still have aspirations at looking at being a game
warden? Yeah, actually my brother took my nephew out. You know, he just sat with him, but my brother got a deer. So,
oh, wow.
You know, that was an awesome picture to see. And every gift, you know, it's Christmas, so it's going to be guns and hunting stuff. And, you know, they're so into it and I love it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Anything special that? This has all been positive, and I want to be positive because it is. But anything special that makes you wake up every day? And because I can tell you that in our bureau, now we're not game wardens or law enforcement, we wake up every day, and I love. I mean, I can't say that anybody doesn't love to come to work, and and the days go by so fast for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just echo what Hannah said. Just the fact that I know every day I'm not waking up to do the same exact thing every day, because that I'm somebody, I can't do that. I've been in jobs where it was repetitive. Every single day I knew exactly what was going to happen, and it just bored me to death. And the fact that I wake up and I just go to my computer and say, well, what does today have in store? That's the greatest thing. And you know what? I actually wrote down a day that I had back in July. I just wanted to give you guys an example of what the schedule was that day. And
so y'all can't see this, but Travis just pulled out a notepad, a green notepad out of his pocket, and this is how prepared that our game wardens are.
So this was July 4th of this past year. It was a Sunday, which generally are more calm days for the game commission. There's, you know, other than the couple of Sunday hunting opportunities in the fall here during the summertime, there's really not much happening.
So even poachers don't poach on Sundays.
Right, yeah.
We probably shouldn't tell them that.
Right. I won't let them believe that. We'll be out there. But so, yeah, this was a Sunday, July 4th. This is what my day looked like. From 8 to 9:30 in the morning, I went and picked up a crop kill that a farmer had available, and I went and permitted out somebody from 9:30 until 1300 that day. So that's 1 o'clock if you don't know military time. I was doing an INE program, so an information education program at a local wildlife rehabber. It was on eagles. It was a couple hours long, and it went really well. People loved it. And I have a good partnership with that rehabber, thankfully, and she does a lot for the agency as well. So that was until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. From 1 o'clock until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I got a call about an injured deer I had to go deal with. So I went and dealt with that. From 2 o'clock until 6:30 that evening, I agreed to work with my deputies on a ATV law enforcement patrol. So I had to go to my game lands building, pick up a UTV, bring it, haul it down south to a co-op property we have through the game commission. And I ran around for about 4 hours on that ATV trying to find people that were riding on the land illegally. We found a bunch of people, got them off the property. And then I went home. That night, I got a call again for another injured deer from 8 o'clock to 9:45 at night. That was a call out. And that's just one day.
Wow.
I did all those things in one day, and that's basically what every day looks like. It's something completely different. It's never the same thing like that ever again. It's like a snowflake. Every single day is individual, and that's what keeps it interesting.
That's awesome. I'm just going to ask this because I'm curious. Have either of you got to work with any of the like deer decoys at any of those operations yet?
No, we haven't. I haven't personally done any decoys yet, but hopefully.
Yeah, that's something that I want to.
Like, yeah.
I want to go hang out some night when they're or day, whatever, whenever it happens in, around my place and be there. I used to do this show in Wisconsin. I forget if it was the Wisconsin Deer and Turkey Expo or whatever, and their DNR would set up, and they actually did a lot with pheasant decoys because it's legal to shoot in the road ditches up in the Midwest. But they videotaped them, and it was amazing how many. And that was like the big hit of the show. You know, you see this minivan roll up, the door slide open, and the guy shoots his decoy, and you know, then they arrest him. And I mean, it was hundreds and hundreds. And you know what? They're doing wrong, and that's one of the things that intrigues me. But let me go here before we hit the end of it, and I'm going to ask both of you. I'll start with Travis. If you have any advice, and you know, we're opening a new class registration here in January. To somebody that has aspirations to do what you all do, and I mean you're done with year one. I mean, you only have 19 more to go, right?
Yeah, right. Minimum.
Minimum, correct. But you know, if you have aspirations to be a game warden, any good solid advice you can give anybody?
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit at the end of the podcast last time, and I'd probably give the same advice I gave last time. It's just keep an open mind and. Just go for it. If you're passionate about it and you think this is a job that you want to do, go for it 100%. Don't dabble in it and say, you know, get halfway through the application period, say, I don't know. Just go all in. If you get into the school and it's not what you thought it was or it's not what you liked, then, you know, you can leave from there and find something else. That's fine. But I think too many people get partway through the application period, and it's a long application, it's a year-long application period, and it's difficult. It's not easy. That kind of deters a lot of people because they don't know if it's going to be worth it at the end of it. But I'm telling you right now, after a year of doing this, it's worth it. Everything that we've talked about here and in the last podcast, you know, we talked about you wake up and you want to do your job every day. And it's a job that almost nobody else in the country is doing. There's a very small population of wildlife conservation officers out there. And it's an incredible job that just the benefits of it far outweigh any negatives that would come from it.
So. Hannah, how about you? Any advice? And especially, you know, girls, females. I mean, it's growing, and we need all we can get, to be honest with you. And we're a lot of girls don't think that it might be the job for them. If you have any advice there, maybe.
Yeah, same thing. If you have a passion for it, you know, and you're willing to put in the work, again, I think we touched on it last time, there's areas that I might not have been the most experienced, but if you want to work and you want to put the effort into it, there's no reason that you can't. And, you know, do your research. If you feel that you might know of something you want to get better at, do it ahead of time and try to put in the effort. But I'm also always willing to help, at least the people in my area that, you know, have come across, like, oh, that's awesome. How do you get into that? Like, again, call. You can email, give us a call, and I'm always willing to help the people that, you know, are in my district or outside of, but of course, you know, most closely to me. I would love to help anybody who either has questions or has an interest. But if you have a passion, you know, just stick with it and work hard.
That's right. That's anything in life. But we're pretty special here at the Game Commission because we have some great people that work for this agency, and I'd like to personally thank you from us at in marketing and communications and for PGC, but we're proud to have both of you as part of our agency, and thank you for coming in today and telling your first year story. And we're going to revisit again. We're going to do this every year till I'm dead, which is probably like 4 or 5 years from now. But I hope you all have a great holiday season. And again, thank you for coming all the way from Butler and Bucks County, right?
Yep.
Am I right?
Yep.
For some reason, I get that confused with the. Is it Chester? Are they close to each other?
It's not too far.
Okay. I'm not good on that southeast. See, my dad, when I was a kid, wouldn't even let me, like, I grew up in Linglestown, which is right up the road here, and he wouldn't even let me, like, cross to go downtown Harrisburg. So when our bureau has to go down to the Capitol, like, I don't know how to get there, and they make fun of me all the time. But, you know, just like you all, at one point in time, you started somewhere, but I want to take a minute and talk about the application period that's going to happen here in early January. It's for the 35th class. It's going to start early January, run through early February, about a month long. And if you want to learn more to apply, go to our website, pgc.pa.gov, and click on Careers and Volunteers, which is under the Information and Resources tab at the top of the page. Hannah and Travis, I can't thank you enough for coming on again. And it's amazing that a year's flown by so fast and the stories that you shared. And I'm sure down the road here on Call the Outdoors, we'll check in again. And maybe year two or year three and see how things are going out there. But be safe. Have a happy holidays. And, again, thanks for coming and joining us today here on Call of the Outdoors. On behalf of the Pennsylvania Game Commission, thank you for tuning in. And we hope that every day of field is filled with memories to last a lifetime. We are committed to leave conservation and wildlife better for the future. And we hope you can tune in next time to the PGC's Call of the Outdoors.